Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, October 16th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
What was that?
That's a little confusing when you do morning programs and afternoon programs, doesn't it?
You end up, well, I'm not going to say you end up talking to yourself, but yeah, you do. You have a tendency to, and I just want to make this little announcement this right now. I was talking to Jennifer Chapman on Friday, and she mentioned to me, she says, well, you know, she says, I've been thinking a lot about my dad, Robert Chapman, and she says, it's his birthday on Monday. I says, well, you know what, I'm going to, you know, just say a little brief or just to let the listeners know, because we've had listeners for so many years, during Bob, before Bob, and everybody loved Bob, and everybody misses Bob Chapman, and so it was an honor working with him for so many years, and today was his birthday, and that's what she was sort of thinking about. That he was born on October 16th, and I can remember doing programs. Oh boy, when it came close, he'd start reminding me like 2 weeks before his birthday, maybe even in a month in advance. Well, you know, my birthday's coming up. Yes, Bob, we know your birthday's coming up. Well, you know, it's my birthday in a couple of weeks. Yeah, Bob, I think you told me. Oh, Melody, you know, it's my birthday, and you know, the 16th of October. So he was he always looked forward to his birthday. So. In memory of Bob, and for the listeners. And there's no memory for gold, that's for sure, today. We've had a little more pressure on gold and silver today, and I'm working on a new computer here. So we're looking at gold today down $9.80 at $1,294. We have silver down 23 cents at $17.28. Platinum was down $15 at $934, and palladium was down 17 at $973. Now, the precious metals, you have rhodium. It's climbing, and I've seen reports rhodium's going to climb back to 10,000. We'll wait and see, but that was the only other white metal that was up. That was up $40 at 3.33%. You have USDX today was stronger, 0.26 by 93.31. Crude oil was up another 42 cents at 51.87. And the paper markets today, we'll have to see. Let's see, where's my paper markets? We're going to have to see if it, did it close? Did it get the number out?
No, not according to what I see.
85 points. 22,957. The NASDAQ was up 18 at 6,624. And the S&P was up 4 at 2,557. 2,557. The 10-year yield, 2.31%. Euro was weaker, only by 0.14, still holding at 118. European and Asian markets were fairly quiet. I guess they're having fires over there in Portugal and in Spain, set by, they're saying an arsonist is doing that. You had Ireland hit by a hurricane, which is fairly rare in that area. I'm not even sure if when the last time they ever had one, if they did. So a little unusual, particularly for this time of year, and certainly getting a little cooler up there for that tropical storm to head to that part of the world. So a lot of weird things are happening. We certainly have the fires. I'm sure everybody's seen the pictures from California. Just heartbreaking. And, you know, there's... So if you're looking to buy wine, folks, get it now. You'll probably see higher prices, perhaps, from that area. I was told, Al, prior to the program, I was looking to do a little research on what those fires are going to cost. They're kind of estimated $25 to $35 billion. I'm going to have to put that number at a lot higher than... because those homes are totally devastated. There's a lot of million-dollar homes in those areas, up in those hills, and the vineyards are not quite sure. I guess there was two vineyards that got caught in the fire last week. But there's lots of other ways that can hit a vineyard as far as its grapes and smoke. You know, it's not like the smoke is going to make them taste like bacon. So they don't taste very good, maybe like an old cigarette, ash from a cigarette. So just the smoke can destroy your crops. Now, a lot of the crops of the grapes are already in. About 70% of this year's wine crop had already come in, and mostly the white grapes, which is okay because they don't use the skin of the white grapes for the wine. It's usually the Merlots, and so you might have higher prices in their Merlots and so forth. And certainly not a wine expert, but it was kind of interesting to see how the fires, even though they might not have been burned down or burned out, they can still be affected. And the winds that are carrying these hot, hot temperatures could also destroy crops without actually having a actual fire going through some of these vineyards. So then you have the tourist industry going through the vineyards. About at one point, well, it's just rounded out to $2 billion a year is visitors spend in the Sonoma County in the wine country, visiting vineyards and taste testing the various wines and so forth. So, and what really is, I did not realize that there's also been some irreplaceable vines that go back as far as the 1800s may have already been destroyed. So, you know, some of those and some of these estate wineries where brands depend on their own homegrown fruits, they're going to have a harder time than those with the flexibility to buy off the bulk market. And also jobs, low-income farm workers, it's going to be difficult because they probably won't stick around. There's no reason for them to. And the San Francisco Chronicle reports that about 46,000 people are employed in the Napa Valley's wine industry. So they don't have it broken out how many actually are the hard laborers and most likely also illegal immigrants. Not all of them. I'm just saying there might be a mix of some in there, but so it was kind of interesting, and again, we'll see exactly what I think you're going to see start failing are the insurance companies. I mean, they're taking on a heck of a lot of losses, these property insurance companies, these casualty companies. Oh, no one anticipates, when I was in the insurance business, a home very rarely burns to the ground. Very rarely, and that's how they base all their statistics on, and how they, you know, do their rate cost comparisons, and not their cost comparisons, but their loss ratios and so forth. Usually your homes do not burn 100% to the ground. Yes, some do. I get that. But they overall do not. And it'll be interesting to see who's the biggest carrier. And also what's interesting, and this versus Harvey, is right away you had information about which insurance carriers were down there and the impact and so forth. And very little, and it might just be too early to tell, but very little is being released about the California insurance and the carriers and how much is insured, how much was it insured, because you have million-dollar homes there and multi-million-dollar homes, and we'll see.
Yeah,
what
there's
type
a great
of
deal of great deal of damage. We've had several hurricanes, one major fire. I mean, we've had other fires earlier in the year that were Northern California and Oregon.
Yes. Montana.
I don't know. It's one of those things, and you wonder, are we aware of these things just because we get more news now than we did 40, 50 years ago? I mean, and it's constant news. It's 24/7. Is that why we're aware? Or is there really an increased frequency in these kinds of catastrophes?
It's not only the increased frequencies. It's the devastation. I mean, Harvey was 200-year-old floods. California, this flood was, I mean, the fire in California is, you know, the loss of life. I mean, there's been big fires before. So no, I don't think it's so much the where access is. I think it's the degree, the size, and happening all together at once. Usually they're sporadic. Well, you know, California had a big fire this year, and, you know, maybe there was a hurricane, you know.
You know, another point is the increased population. 50 years ago, you could have a fire up in the area you're talking about, and there weren't many people up there, and there weren't many homes up there in the sense that there are now. As the population, not just in the United States, but in the world, as it grows, we can expect to see, you know, calamities where increasingly large number of people are injured or even killed, and in part just because we're putting more sardines into the can than the can was perhaps designed to hold. But you put us all together, cheek and jowl, and the rest, it makes us vulnerable to in much larger numbers than would have been true when the population was smaller.
But I mean, even if you look at that tropical storm that hit Ireland, I mean, when's the last time, you know, in, you know, 100 years, 200 years, 1,000 years ago? Don't know, but, you know, it certainly is, you know, different. And absolutely, the population, the immigration population hits a record 60 million in the USA.
Immigration,
population.
Mm-hmm. You're talking one-fifth of the population are immigrants?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So the world is a growing, and we know what they do.
Yeah, the world is a growing, and you know what you're pointing to in some regards. If there isn't already an overpopulation problem, there's going to be. And there is cheap transportation, really, compared to what it might have once cost to cross an ocean, for example. It's relatively cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to leave the doors open? The world is going to keep pushing its population until there's, you know, it becomes greater and greater and greater. And there are people who want to open the doors and let anybody come in this country that wants to come here. And they're going to come from all over if you allow them. And is that a good thing? Is that a tolerable thing? Can we even survive that kind of liberality? Right, if that's a word, can we survive that, or is it foolish? Do we have an obligation to protect our own against what will be an extraordinary demand for land and food and whatever in the future? Do we need more people, or do we need to protect what we've got?
Well, I think I know what most of us would say, but both, Al. Both.
Yeah.
Of that, both. But we all know. But we all know when you have this type of population, you know, it really is only amount of time until there's some sort of pandemic that wipes out half of the populations.
I understand that.
You know, I mean, it's a given.
Where is it going to happen?
Well,
I mean,
it'll be
almost
global.
Certainly.
It'll
almost
be global.
It'll probably be global, but where will the biggest impact be seen? And I'm going to have to guess India and China. That's where you have the highest population and presumably the highest population densities, which means the diseases will move from, you know, from victim to victim at maximum speed and, you know, have maximum effect. The day has to be coming, and don't know when, but it just follows. You can't look at this and say, oh, that could never happen. No, you look at it and say, that's got to happen. It's bound to happen.
The only question
is when. It's going to happen in 6 months? Is it going to happen in 10 years? I don't know. But it certainly has to happen just because population densities are so extraordinary. Population numbers are so extraordinary. It means that a lot of people are not properly fed, not properly sheltered. They can't, and without proper food, they can't have proper nutrition. They can't be as healthy as they might otherwise be. They can't be able to fight off disease to the same extent they might be able to if they were properly fed. They just have to be vulnerable in those countries. And China and India are the two that come to mind, but you can look at North Korea. Those people are living in a starvation environment. most of them. If I understand,
but no one's going in there to bring anything, so they probably have a fairly strong immune system. You know, perhaps.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. If you're not properly fed, I've seen pictures of people harvesting grass. That's what's for dinner. Grass. It's what's for dinner. You know, but I mean, we mow the lawn. They go out and they harvest grass so they have something to eat at night, at least in some instances. And this is part of the reason why I'm saying, is it wise to let an influx of immigrants pour into this country? Because North Korea is not the only one where they're eating, the only place where you can eat grass. To some degree, there's something similar is going on in Venezuela. I don't think they're down to the same, I don't think they have been degraded to the same. They're eating their dogs and cats and the pigeons and the rats. They're cleaning out the small livestock before they get to the grass. But there's a point here. These stories, I think, will become increasingly commonplace. And if, insofar as that's true, you have to ask yourself, how many people can we feed? Do we want to bring more people in here where we have to feed them? Maybe we can't. It's a good idea.
Venezuela, North Korea,
they're telling us about what's going to happen in the world, you know, 5 years, 10 years from now. We're not going to get away from that as near as I can see.
You know, unfortunately, there's so much waste in this country anymore. And yeah, we could probably feed a lot of people. There shouldn't be one person that goes hungry in this country. But there is just so much waste. Things are just thrown away. People clean out your refrigerators. What do you throw away? I hear people tell me, well, my husband doesn't eat leftovers. So, you know, if nobody eats it, it gets thrown away. There are just no reason people should be going hungry in this country. And I do believe in part it is by design. It's a terrible thing. The cleanliness of this country, sometimes when, you know, if I'm traveling and I have to go into a gas station or one of those, where they have the food service and the drink services, you know, the little mm-hmm. grocery stores. Sometimes when I walk out of there, I just think to myself, God, I wonder what I caught, you know, because they're not the cleanest places anymore. And
then you go in and you get that smell of Lysol, you know, it's kind of permeates your clothes, and you'll be carrying the Lysol for the next 50 miles down the road until the
wind. And yet, I can remember when I was a child and we would travel and we'd stop at the gas stations. That was the pride of the gas stations. That's how they lured you in. We have the cleanest bathroom around, and you know, you would gravitate to that one. Not today. We've got the
what
best,
if they were advertising
we have the
ours,
best food today.
Ours is the third cleanest. Did you stop in there or? Probably not. We're going to break for a couple of commercials. Melody and I will be back on Finance and Survival in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Do you have something for us right now, Melody, or would you like me to?
Well, I was working on the new pricing for the since the price has dropped. This morning we had gold at 1305, and we've seen the prices drop down to the level that I talked about, the 1295 level. And the prices on the $10 Liberties in Mint State 62 didn't correct. And they're much higher. The price on those today would be $715.
As compared
and
to
Friday of 705.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't
even
take
though
much.
The price of gold went down, the price mm-hmm. of the $10 Liberties went up.
Now this might just correct overnight, but on the other hand, when you have active buying in one particular line of coins, you can help maintain the price. And let me see if in fact, remember when I started the special, just last week again, they were selling for $10 less than the $20 Liberty gold piece, two of them. Today, they'd actually be selling for, I can't believe that they went up that much just on the weekend, and today, they would actually be $30 more.
It's pretty interesting.
And that's just based on wholesale price. It has nothing to... Actually, it's more than that. Let me do this again. And this is just based on wholesale pricing. There's no commissions in this at all. Let's see. Bear with me, folks. Actually, it's $40. It's a $40 spread. So that's how much they popped up in just a week, even though we've seen pressure. Now, again, if gold stays at this level tomorrow, they'll probably come down maybe $5, which is no big deal. Or they could go up $5. So, folks, I never steer you wrong when it comes to purchasing gold and silver coins. And certainly this is still a good buy, even though it's over that 20. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188 I also got a special in from my seller. My seller that sent me an email. He has Mint State 64 $20 Saints. We only have up to 200 available. And that is showing at a $25 discount. And if you buy 50 or more, we can even help you on that price, which is just basically 7% over melt. And that's by far the cheapest premium in over 15 years. So.
Oh, it tells us again.
Yeah.
Looks like a, buy low, sell high moment. Prices are down at record levels. If it's the lowest markup in 15 years, this is essentially a record low. Even though the number might not be the record low, but the percentage, the markup is at a record low.
Over the melt, absolutely.
It's another suggestion that we are at the buy low moment. This is perhaps a great opportunity.
800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And, of course, visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
You know, I was taught years ago, and whether I'm not sure that they still subscribe to the same theory today in physics. But I was taught that the way we generated the elements that we find in the soil and in the mountains and the earth, they were originally generated in the nuclear engine of the sun or suns. And they took hydrogen and combined it to make helium and made the heat, turned the helium into carbon and oxygen and one thing and another like that. And there was a kind of nuclear synthesis that took place in the sun, and not just our sun, but other suns. And when the suns died, they exploded, whatever. They spread all of this created material, and it was spread out, turned into dust, which eventually coalesced into planets and moons and one thing another like that. That's the way I've come to understand how we have different minerals. They were ultimately forged in the furnaces, the nuclear furnaces of the different stars. Now, here's an article from The Telegraph, an English publication, and it's interesting, right, because it talks about how we get gold. Now, gold is unusual. It's not susceptible to most of the same chemical forces that apply to most metals. It doesn't rust. It doesn't corrode. It's malleable. You can spread it out in sheets ultimately that are a little more than one molecule thick. At least that's conceivable, I suppose. Gold is an unusual material. It's not really valuable. It's unusual. And here's an article from The Telegraph, and the headline is "Secret of Gold Finally Found." Precious metals are forged in cataclysmic collision of neutron stars. It says the secret of creating gold has fascinated alchemists for thousands of years, but now scientists have finally solved the mystery. Well, I'm not sure that's true. They have an opinion that they're willing to agree to right now. It doesn't necessarily mean it's true, but nevertheless, it's interesting. Precious metals are forged in the cataclysmic collision of neutron stars and then flung out into the universe, where they eventually aggregate with other stardust into larger bodies like planets or comets. Previously, scientists had theorized that such cosmic smashes could create the vast energy needed to create gold, platinum, and silver, but for the first time, they've actually recorded it happening. On August 17th, astronomers in the U.S. picked up a signal from two neutron stars crashing together 130 million years ago, when dinosaurs still roamed the Earth. And they have concluded that when these two neutron stars collide, something extraordinary happens. It's not just the nuclear furnace that starts with hydrogen and turns it into helium and turns it into whatever and starts working up the list of metal, the elements and metals and so on. This was something else. This was something other than that, and it was based on the collision of two neutron stars. And I'm not an astronomer where I can tell you exactly what all that means, but what it's telling us is that, what it's telling me is that gold was created in a way quite different from silver, not necessarily silver. Gold was created in a way quite different from iron, for example, or lead, or plutonium. The kinds of materials that were created to the sun was one thing. Gold and perhaps platinum and silver were created by the collision of neutron stars, a comparative rarity, and created in a way that the nuclear furnaces in the ordinary stars could not match or generate. And it might be part of the reason that gold is not susceptible to corrosion, for example. Didn't come from the same forge. Didn't come out of the conventional stars. It came out of neutron stars and collisions of neutron stars. And I don't know if that's true or false, but it is at least interesting that gold may be derived from a completely different mechanism. Maybe that's what makes it special. Maybe that's what makes it, you know, almost unique. Well, Melody, are you going to get any gold because it was made by neutron? Does that change your opinion about gold, knowing that it
what
might
I want to know is how do they
stars,
what I want to know is how, what I want to know is how do they pick up a signal that happened 130 million years ago?
Well, it's been a long time coming.
I guess it ricochets from. Oh, what's that noise? Oh.
No, it's 130 light million light years away. In theory, we're looking, when we look at the stars, we're seeing light that was emitted by the stars millions of years ago. It takes time for it to cross the immense distances of space, and it's just now getting here, even though it was emitted.
Picked up a signal.
Yes.
From Ruby. They picked up a signal from Ruby. I suspect, but the two stars crashing together 130 million years ago, it took that long for the sound to get here?
Well, it may have taken that long for somebody to answer the phone. Maybe it was up to the species to advance to a point where we could take the message. They just kept ringing and ringing and ringing. Finally, finally taking the call. Here's something from Engadget, which is a publication that deals with technology and whatever. Odd little story. FDA-approved robot assistant gives surgeons force feedback. Surgeons are trained to accurately operate on you when you need it, but robotic assistance could help them get to hard-to-reach places and boost their accuracy even more. Senhance, is the name of a robotic surgical assistant that's just earned the FDA's approval, and it's designed to accomplish both of those. It's been designed to get at both hard-to-reach places and increase accuracy. The machine can help surgeons carry out minimally invasive surgery. In fact, the FDA has approved its use because after a pilot test involving 150 patients, the agency concluded that Senhance is as accurate as the Da Vinci robot. So you know how I know how impressed you are by that comparison, Melody, because you know how accurate the Da Vinci robot is when it came to gynecological and colorectal procedures, according to Transcentrix, a company that developed the Senhance robot. It's the first surgical assistant for the abdominal area to get the FDA's approval since 2000. Company games. Well, the story goes on, but it tells us more about the technology and whatever. But the point is, we aren't going to have robot assistance right now. They've been approved. Your doctor's going to have a robotic assistant in the operating theater, in case you need certain kinds of surgery. And you can look at this. And it's only a question of time. They're going to bring them in. They're going to help. They're going to help in places where it's hard to reach and whatever. They're going to do that now, or where more accuracy is more important. They're going to do that now. But soon they're going to be the surgeons are going to be replaced. We'll have artificial intelligence that will determine what your problem is, what's your illness, what's your problem, and then the artificial intelligence will assign one of the robots to make the fix. And here we go. New world. Here we come.
You better have a good computer programmer.
Yeah, I understand that. You may wind up going in for a tummy tuck and find out that you're now transgender. Oops. Got the wrong... Oh boy, don't you hate it when that happens? They put the wrong...
I hit the delete button.
But we are... Interesting times.
Well, you see all kinds of articles about the robots and, what they're performing and so forth. And I've seen reference to the surgeries and so forth before, but I think I even saw where somebody actually married one already.
Married a robot?
Married a robot.
Mm-hmm.
And you see references, of course, sex sells. So, you see a lot of references just to robot sex and things like that. And it's like, it is a creepy, creepy world. And, you know, what's really disturbing is the youth of today is they're just so ready to embrace technology without even questioning any, you know, they're just, you know, that's almost like a, it's almost like a drug to them anymore, is that, you know, they have to constantly have their technology changing.
I don't know if they have to have it changing, but they need to get whatever is the newest.
The companies have to continue to provide, you know, these apps and programs in order to, you know, give the drug to the younger generation anymore. So, I mean, it is like a drug. They need to have more and better, and, you know, I don't know if it's entertainment. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know, but it's while that sector of populations become smarter, you have this other group of folks that, you know, are becoming so dependent on these computers to tell them everything that they no longer have the ability to have a critical thinking.
Well, I don't know if they ever did. I mean, you can.
I'd like to think they did to some degree.
Yeah, I'd like to think that too. But I'm not sure that.
I think we have
a problem where we have a technology that is advancing in ways where the essence of the technology is beyond the average person's ability to understand, comprehend, fix, repair. Vast majority of people can't really get into a computer and understand what's going on inside, analyze it, dissect it, fix it.
The biggest problem.
Right? We can use it. They can make it. I mean, we'll get it where the monkeys are going to be able to use the computers before this is all over, and the goats and whatever. They'll find a way to get the animals to use the computers and think it's all very clever. But who will be able to program? Who will be able to fix, repair, diagnose? I don't know. And it won't, but it won't be the vast majority of people.
And what's really sad is you wonder just how far technology would be if it wasn't backed by government. If so many of these big companies weren't government supported, and you just wonder, just military supported. And
what I wonder is what happens when Apple finally comes out and they say, you know what, that last phone we put out, that's the best we can do. We got nothing else, so, you know, there won't be any new phones. What happens then? Does the industry collapse when they finally admit, we can't do anymore? We've done everything we can do. We can't advance.
Apple might already be experiencing that. Their last release, or soon to be release, or you didn't have lines standing around the building to get the number 8. And you're right. You know how much, you know, they can improve the technology within the phone, but I mean, a picture is a picture.
Yeah.
What they need to improve on eventually, is speed and memory. Speed and memory.
And then one. Let's take another break for a couple more commercials, and Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. And while we were taking a break here, Melody and I were talking a little bit about, she had a story about what was observed. We're talking about iPhones and whatever. And people in Lagos, Nigeria, and how even children, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, can actually take apart an iPhone and put it back together. They have been forced to learn how to do this. We'll go ahead and expand on that a little bit.
It was an interesting interview with Anthony Bodine, I believe his name is, Bodine. He goes to various parts of the world and, you know, talks about their culture and their food, and he eats various things. And he was being interviewed by someone on one of the programs, and he was talking about how they all compete, because Nigeria is an oil-rich country. It doesn't trickle down to the people. So they go in and they basically, you know, they're, you know, all have their own businesses because they have to survive. And he was talking about these children that, you know, just in the streets, you know, they're street fighters, I guess, and their abilities. And it's the same thing, not just with the iPhones, but almost anything to which they have improved their ability to compete with the next guy on the street in order to survive, in order to feed them and their families. And it really was kind of interesting. And they showed pictures and the hustle and bustle. You know, there was like millions and millions and millions of people in this city. And they're all out there trying to make a living because they know they get nothing from the government. So they hone in on these.
It forces them to the competition, the struggle.
The struggle.
You can call it competition. It may be better for, in those circumstances, it might just be better to say the struggle is so intense. If you want to survive, you really do have to offer the world something extraordinary. You have to be good at something. And these kids are apparently children mastering the iPhones, right? Pretty amazing.
It really was
uneducated children. Children that have essentially dropped out of school, not well educated.
Don't even have schools.
Pretty extraordinary.
It really is.
I saw a story lately, an article lately, that talked about one of the fundamental problems. We hear from Janet Yellen, and she's complaining, and others in the Federal Reserve say, why don't we have more inflation? And some people think the answer to that is because we've had a huge increase in the global supply of labor. When we started out with global free trade, we opened the door where people in this country had to compete against laborers in China, for example. Once we could move products across the ocean inexpensively and competitively, all of a sudden American labor had to compete with Chinese labor, and the world's, what had been previously a relatively limited supply of labor in the West. And because it was limited, the prices paid laborers was high, and they could live prosperous lives and whatever. All of a sudden, and because there weren't that many laborers relative to the productivity of the West, the United States and Europe and wherever, they opened up to the Third World. And all of a sudden, there is this labor shock, this huge increase in people available to work, and they take the job for a couple bucks an hour, a couple bucks a day, and be glad to have it. And the result has been that there's no pressure on American businesses, or not much, to pay a high wage to American labor. Because ultimately, American labor is competing with foreign labor, and therefore the prices have to be held down. Well, the lesson behind this is that if you want to make some money in this world, and I'm not talking about being a millionaire, multi-billionaire, or whatever, but for an average person, you don't want to go into manufacturing. You don't want to get a job on the assembly line, which used to be a fundamental form of middle-class wealth. Get up on that assembly line, put those Fords together or whatever, automobiles or whatever, work that assembly line, work at manufacturing. That's no longer a reliable way to move yourself into a world of prosperity, because you're going to be competing with labor all over the world. What you need to do, if you want a job and you're kind of a blue-collar person, all right, instead of working at the assembly line, what you need to do is get into service work, which is a little bit what Melody is talking about with these children in Nigeria that are taking iPhones apart and putting them back together properly. They're providing service work. They're not doing manufacturing. Manufacturing is so competitive that there's not much, there won't be much there to make as a laborer. But service work, for example, if you can get yourself a job as a plumber or electrician, they can't outsource that. They can't call somebody in India and say, I need somebody to fix, to rot out the sewer. Right? You got to have service work requires you to be local. And it means that you will be competing against local labor rather than global labor. And that will be, in theory, it'll provide an opportunity to make more money doing service work than you can doing manufacturing. And it points, and I have no doubt that that observation is fundamentally correct. And how many people can do service work? I don't know. I don't think we can all do service work. But nevertheless, if you're capable of doing, you're capable of doing service work, and you're also capable of working on an assembly line in a manufacturing plant, you're better off to take the service work. And even better than that, become self-employed. If you can master your service, like these kids we're talking about in Nigeria, if you can become good at what you're doing, you stand and you run your own little business. You really do stand to make more money and become more prosperous. And it won't be a way of becoming a multimillionaire, probably, but you can support yourself, you can feed yourself well for most of your life if you get into service work instead of manufacturing. So,
you know, it is interesting when we talk about the wages and so forth. There's numerous, and I was reading about even the robots have an impact on wages. Yeah. You have the deunionization.
Yep.
That has an impact on wages, and some of these things aren't going to go away. So wages are not going to come back. It's more than just bringing the jobs back and thinking that you're going to have greater wages. That's just not true. Even this, what I was reading about was the rise of non-compete agreements.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, well, non-compete agreements is just for the really smart guy. No. These agreements have filtered down even to the fast food franchises and throughout the retail and even the service sectors. And they will do what they do to deter workers from moving to a rival enterprise for a higher pay. So, you know, also the non-standard employment. So there's a lot of reasons why, and of course, globalization, as you mentioned, too. There's several reasons that are impacting why the wages are not rising. And so
the article I was reading, where it described the impact of globalization and the effect of how it compelled American laborers, for example, and
exactly.
English laborers and Irish and whatever, forced them to compete with workers in China and India. It points out that it also helped cause unions to lose their power in this country.
Sure.
Because there is no longer a restricted supply of labor. Same thing is true with illegal aliens coming into this country. It forces people to compete with cheap labor, and the net result is, if you want to go out on strike, go ahead. I can get 100 guys to replace you. You know, and the result is unions have lost their power, laborers have lost their power, the middle class is eroding. And it was an interesting argument, an article, because it illustrates that the problem was, in many regards, the problem we're having with an eroding middle class may be globalization in the first place.
Well, that maybe was the, we were probably better the off, biggest
maybe
impact.
Maybe we're better off to just restrict this market and keep it for ourselves. And that's not necessarily irrational. The people who favor multinational corporations want the world to be available for them to sell into or to manufacture from. But we have, or certainly had, and we still have, really, the best market in the world. That's the United States. What if we restricted it? We're, you know, put tariffs back up. And we kept that market for ourselves instead of opening it up where we compete, where laborers, American laborers, have to compete with Chinese laborers and Indian laborers. It can't do us, it can't serve us well, all right? And we could, we have the market, we'd have to do some foreign trade, I get that, but nevertheless, if we relied on ourselves to make our own televisions and our own computers and our own automobiles and whatever, if we became more reliant on ourselves, we would be able to hold on to our market, and we might be able to hold these things together. But as things are going, when Melody, you talk about how businesses are becoming more competitive, and of course they're using robots, for example. They're not doing that because they want to exactly. They're not doing it as a blessing for the ordinary American. They're doing it because they are desperate to make a buck. They're doing it because the competition is so severe. But you got to do almost anything you can to make a dollar. And what that suggests is that we are on the edge of a very difficult period. There are... You can have competition is a good thing. I absolutely believe in it. I'm not in favor of reducing competition, at least
not
within the context of the United States. I'm not interested in reducing competition, but still, you can enter into a world that's so competitive, so extraordinarily difficult to survive in, that 8 and 9 year old kids have to learn how to fix iPhones. They want to survive. They have to learn that. They're not learning that because they have nothing better to do. They're learning because they have to have something in order to survive. And it's an evidence of an increased competition in Nigeria. It's an increased competition in this country, increased competition in China, New Delhi, India. Does that level of competition, can it get so fierce that it becomes evidence that we're headed for some sort of a dangerous crack-up? How much competition can we survive before somebody just says, that's it, give me a rifle?
Well, don't know. But I mean... but
neither do I.
Earlier we talked about population, calling the population, and, you know, it's... You know, I think... Whether we talk, you know, and this is just, I mean, things get too big and it's out of control.
I know.
And I think this is where we're at. You're going to see the multinational corporations, yeah, whether they need to make a buck, whether they're desperate to make a buck, they're going to take every buck that they find.
Yep.
They're not going to let it filter down into the economy. It's so globalized now, folks. And I want to be optimistic. I want to be positive that, hey, you throw some tariffs on stuff. And we have tariffs on steel. That really hasn't worked. We put tariffs in other places. They really haven't worked. We put sanctions on. It doesn't work.
It's worked in the past.
But this isn't the past. This isn't the past anymore.
No, but I don't think
you can just
open up. I think it's extraordinarily dangerous. If you're going to open up to free market and free competition from anybody on the face of the earth, it necessarily means that the average cost of labor is going to fall down in the direction of whatever you can make in Nigeria. That's where we're headed. And for a lot of people that are already... And if we go to that, where's our middle class going to be found? We're not going to find a middle class. We're going to have a super rich at the top and a mass of poor at the bottom. It'll become almost a feudal society while we are trying to compete head-on with millions and millions of laborers in China or India or wherever. There's no easy answer. There's no painless answer on any of this. But these are the kinds of questions that we are really going to have to face and maybe come to some very difficult and unpleasant conclusions and act on those conclusions accordingly, or we're going to find ourselves in a mess that we won't be able to get out of. I'm suggesting that we're coming to a moment where the world is not going to be maximally prosperous. I'm suggesting that we're coming to a time that looks more like Nigeria than Miami Beach.
I agree. I mean, when you have Europe, the U.S., you have Japan, you have China. I mean, these central banks. I mean, it's the only thing that's keeping these economies going.
And that's a lot of that is just illusions.
It's trillions. I mean, a lot of
what's holding us together are lies, illusions. Right? Sooner or later, this is going to have to break down. And if it does, this is part of the reason the program is named Financial Survival. Your survival, not your prosperity, not your comfort zone, the rest of it, your survival might be threatened. And it's part of the reason you need to think about these things, make up your own mind, decide what you have to do. And if you agree with these ideas, this line of thought, then you have to do something to protect your survival and perhaps in the foreseeable future. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.